Just bear with me for a second here. We'll get the water organized. Okay, good afternoon again. I failed to greet those on the cybercast that may be tuning in. Appreciate you being able to do that. Brethren, one of the most solid examples of faith and loyalty to God in the Bible is the prophet Daniel. Obviously, there are many examples regarding faith and loyalty to God, but the prophet Daniel, unlike many other men and women of faith down through time, is different in the sense that, at least with my studies, I've not been able to see anything in the Bible where Daniel is portrayed as having had faults. In contrast to so many other men and women of God that, while they were passionate in their faith, also at times failed greatly. It's not the case with Daniel. Daniel seems to be unblemished, seems to have had a special, excellent spirit, as it's described in the Bible. So he is a good example for us to look at. In fact, there's a popular, I will call it a folk song. Perhaps that is not exactly what it is, but there's a popular song entitled "Dare to Be a Daniel." Perhaps you have heard it. And the lyrics go like this: "Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, dare to make it known." And men and women of faith down through time have exhibited that tendency, or the ability to stand alone, to have a purpose firm, and also to make it known. So in the time we share this afternoon, brethren, I'd like to take a look with you of the example of Daniel in the Bible and how he remained committed to God in the face of great adversity at a time when the nation of Judah and earlier Israel were taken into captivity. Because there's a balance, brethren. You know, when we see people that are passionate, you kind of have the broad spectrum. You have on the one side people that are not passionate about anything, and then the other people that are passionate, or maybe you call them radical, and the tendency is to go to the extremes. And while Daniel is one of the, as I said before, prominent example of faithfulness in the Bible, he seems to have had the ability to strike that balance of remaining uncompromisingly committed to the way of God without having those radical tendencies that often accompanies human passion. Passion in the sense of being passionate about a particular subject or principle. His powerful example provides proven principles for us to navigate down the difficult road ahead. So for those of you that like to have titles, the title of today's message is simply "Dare to be a Daniel." Proven principles for the road ahead. And we're just going to focus primarily, actually almost exclusively, in the book of Daniel and examine from the book of Daniel how Daniel lived and the principles that he applied and how that is a sure way to navigate the road ahead. Take a look at principle number one. Principle number one was that Daniel purposed in his heart to follow God, and he did so with grace and wisdom. As I mentioned before, you know, it's one thing to purpose in your heart to follow God and to be passionate about it, but to do it with the grace and wisdom that Daniel did is indeed exemplary and one that we can learn from. Let's go over to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. We'll begin reading in verse 1. It states here, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. I had the opportunity earlier this year to visit Jerusalem. Actually, we were there on the day of Pentecost, which was special in its own way. But when you've been there and you see the city that Nebuchadnezzar came and besieged and walked through the tunnel that Hezekiah built in order to be able to hold back the enemies when they besieged him, it is indeed a very compelling experience to see the reality and the circumstances and the places where God worked at that time. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick understanding, who had ability to serve the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. So you have here young men, in Daniel's case, most likely a teenager, but certainly a very young man, that was among the captives of noble descent, and he was chosen by the king to come and learn the language and literature of the Chaldeans. This was a great opportunity for a young man that was a prisoner of war to be afforded this. I have sometimes characterized it as a full scholarship. Daniel has a great opportunity here. But notice in verse 7, to them the chief of the eunuchs gave the names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Shadrach Abednego. But Daniel, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So here we see that important first principle. Daniel didn't just do this by feeling compelled somehow, by some outside force, or by some law that was being enforced on him. He recognized the importance of the law of God and embraced it, and wanted to do it. He purposed, as it says here, in his heart to follow God. And that's what we should be doing. We should not just recognize the fact that the law of God is to be kept, but to fully embrace it by purposing in our heart to follow it. And I'd like to now point out the grace and wisdom aspect, because here you have a young man in very difficult situation, and the grace and wisdom with which he followed God is indeed very instructive. Now, God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord king, my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test us. Test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be examined before you, in the countenances of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. The wisdom that Daniel used here was that instead of just saying to the king's eunuch, look it, I'm righteous, I'm not eating that pig. I'm assuming that pork was one of the things that was offered to him. Instead of doing that, he said, work with us. Test us. See how this works, and if it doesn't after 10 days, then do what you have to do. Very wise and graceful way to follow God. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So there was a short-term benefit for Daniel purposing in his heart to follow God. But there was a much longer benefit as well. We'll get to that in a minute. And I'd like to point out the fact that following God, the benefits of following God sometimes are counterintuitive. And the reason I say that is Daniel would have had every reason humanly to compromise his principles because he was, after all, a prisoner of war. It would have been easy for him to say, well, look, I'm a prisoner of war. He didn't have any constitutional rights. I'm just going to have to eat what the king serves me. On a higher level of human reasoning, he could have also said, look, I've got this great opportunity to go to the world's best educational institution. I've got a full scholarship. So let's not fuss around with what we're eating and drinking. If I work this right, perhaps I can get a job in the king's court and be of benefit to the people of God at some point. I'm saying it's counterintuitive. There would have been reason for him to justify some type of compromise, but he didn't. He purposed in his heart to follow God. Now let's see what the long-term results of doing that were. We continue. In verse 16, thus the steward took away their portion of the delicacies and wine that they were to drink, and he gave them vegetables. As for the four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, the end of 3 years, here was the result. When the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they serve before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Because of Daniel purposing in his heart to follow God without regard for his own benefit, without attempting to compromise because he thought, you know, he might get a better position, exactly that happened. Because God gave them, as it says here in verse 17, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. So much so that they were 10 times wiser than all the wise men of the king's entire realm. And as a consequence, Daniel served for many, many years in multiple administrations. It's an amazing thing, actually, when you think about it. But it is a truism that applies still today. I could list you a number of examples of young people in the Church of God that at what appears to be great risk, keeping God's Sabbath and holy days, the Feast of Tabernacles in particular, going away, missing classes for a period of time. And what I have seen is that when these individuals do it by purposing in their heart to follow God, God being the same yesterday, today, and forever, gives them the knowledge and wisdom so that invariably they end up doing better than most of their other students. The key, of course, is that the individual purposes in his or her heart to do that. Brethren, on the road ahead, it is important that you purpose in your heart to follow God passionately, but to do so with the grace and wisdom that Daniel exhibited in his example here. The second principle that is proven and good for the road ahead is to seek the mercies of God lest we perish. This particular principle is embedded in the next story here that we're going to look at in Daniel. It's kind of, I say embedded because maybe it's one of those things that doesn't just jump out at you at first glance. It's about Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We'll continue here in chapter 2, verse 1. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. And his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams, so they came and stood before the king. So he had had a dream that troubled him. But the king also, as we see later in this particular context, didn't disclose what his dream was about. He wanted to make sure that these folks were authentic. So the king said to them, verse 3, I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give you the interpretation. But the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made into an ash heap. I'd say that was fairly direct and clear. You know, I think he would have gotten my attention. Very different culture from the culture in which we have been blessed, actually, to grow up in, where, you know, we're in a country where we are guaranteed certain rights by the Constitution. In this particular case, and actually in all the examples we'll review, the entire law, everything that went on was invested into one person. And, of course, as you've heard, you know, power corrupts, and it does, but absolute power corrupts absolutely, and it does. We will see this even with Nebuchadnezzar. And he made it clear, guys, tell me about my dream that I dreamt and its interpretation or I'm going to cut you up. Verse 7, they answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream and we will give its interpretation. And the king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me, till the time, the marginal reference is till the situation changes. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. Now, if you look at commentaries on this particular, there's a little bit more background, actually, but it was a political situation. He put them on a spot to test their authenticity. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who can tell you the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean." So they're saying it was unreasonable, and of course, by human standards, it was. Verse 13, "So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them." So Daniel and his companions were just lumped in with the rest of them. "Then with counsel and wisdom," notice the approach again, Daniel consistently applied the principles that he had at a very early age. "Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon, and answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, 'Why is the decree from the king so urgent?'" And why is it so urgent? "Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel, so Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation." Now the interesting thing here is that the Chaldeans also went into the king, and the king said, "All you want is extra time so that you can deceive me," and yet Daniel comes in before the same king and asks for time, and time is granted to him. You know, when you approach governing authorities, the way in which you approach them, to a large extent, determines the outcome and the response, as we see here with this particular king. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation, verse 17. "Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon." Daniel was wise. Daniel was extraordinarily intelligent, but he understood very clearly to whom he was responsible and where that wisdom came from. So he sought the mercies of God and recognized that without God's mercy, we all perish. Continuing, "Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision." So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. In verse 20 and 21, he recounts that blessing. We'll drop down to verse 24. "Therefore Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, 'Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation.' Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, 'I found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation.' The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, 'Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?'" So Daniel is asked the question, are you going to be able to do this? And notice Daniel's response. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, The secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. And then Daniel proceeds to tell the king what he had dreamt, and then proceeded to also tell him the interpretation. And I'm not going to recount that. You know the story, and that's not my point. My point is that a solid, proven principle to move forward is to seek the mercies of God lest we perish. And again, because Daniel did that, the outcome was much greater than expected. Because of Daniel's appeal to God, we today in 2011, in 2011, have insight into the future that we otherwise wouldn't have. We'll just jump forward to verse 44 because it speaks to the end time. Daniel says, latter days. And it speaks to something that we all look forward to. Verse 44. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all those kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Here we have Daniel speaking thousands of years ago to a Gentile king that had conquered God's people, and projecting forward in time in a manner in which we can, for example, understand unfolding events in Europe and understand where that will all end. But ultimately, the good news is what we read here in verse 44. The kingdom of God will be established. Brethren, nothing can change that. The only thing that we need to be concerned about is to apply the sure principles of God, seek His mercy, so that we do not perish along the way. Principle number three that we find here in the book of Daniel and his example are that we need to follow God's command without compromise. Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, we'll begin reading in verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width was 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So Nebuchadnezzar, who had had previous interaction, of course, with Daniel, goes ahead and sets up this image of gold and makes a decree that everybody has to bow down and worship that image. Verse 4, then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Therefore, at that certain time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. You know, the one thing that doesn't change, I've said, having lived in different parts of the world, I've said, the one thing that is the same everywhere is politics. You know, the political system of this world, you know, there's always this type of thing going on. And the Chaldeans were the astrologers, the wise men, and all of those things at that time. And they were jealous. You know, here you have a couple of Jews that are prisoners of war, and the king is giving them positions of responsibility. So they say to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. So they thought this was a great opportunity to get rid of these Jewish prisoners of war that had infringed on their turf. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar was on the spot, and he did what powerful men often do. He got angry. Verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. So he's giving them one more chance. You know, if you go ahead now and fall down and worship, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Brethren, here is where Nebuchadnezzar made a big mistake. He crossed God. It was no longer about a couple of Jewish captives. It was about God and Nebuchadnezzar and who's ultimately in charge. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. There were no long speeches here. It was quite simple. We're going to follow God. We're going to trust Him. And it didn't take a lot of complicated explanation. Notice what they said in verse 17. If this is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and He will deliver us from your hand, O King. So they declared without hesitation that God was able to deliver them. They didn't know whether God would. But they said, He will deliver us from your hand, because they understood a short trip in the oven would ultimately get them closer to the kingdom of God. verse 18, "But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." The principle they're applying here is following God's command without compromise. And while they were straight and to the point, they also did it respectfully. I mean, they were candid. They were clear. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar, having already been upset, is now full of fury. And the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar was really going to make a point. He was not going to have some Jewish god cross him. I'm expressing, of course, his viewpoint. What he would learn was that God is God. So he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed these men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So the very men of valor that he commanded to cast them into the furnace ended up dying because it was that hot. It's a great story, isn't it? And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. You know, it was a cauldron. And they dumped them in there. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. And he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." "Look," he answered, "I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God." You see, what Nebuchadnezzar failed to realize is that he had crossed God. It was no longer about a couple Jewish captives. He was messing with God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke. Remember, this is the guy that shortly before, whatever time it took to bind the men, to heat the furnace, to throw them in, so it was some time, but a short time before, he had said, "Who is that God that's going to deliver you from my hand?" Notice the change. "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted him, and they have frustrated the king's word, and they yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own god. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap." Seems like he had one solution for everything. You just cut them in pieces and make a hash heap out of their house, and that solves the problem. The principle here, brethren, is when we follow God's command without compromise, God can intervene on our behalf. Especially when the challenge becomes a challenge of who's the God that's in charge. You know, ultimately, whatever difficulty the church has, God is in charge. What I say to you, what anybody else says to you, is immaterial, because God's message, God's prophecy, God's promise will stand. And I'm heartened, brethren, in this difficult time at the words over in John chapter 6. Why don't we go there? John chapter 6. John chapter 6, verse 37, is an incredible promise that God gives to all of His people, no matter where they are. God knows His own. God is in charge. And notice the promise here, all that the Father gives me will come to me. This is Jesus Christ speaking. And the one who comes to me, I will by no means cast out. Jesus Christ is under obligation, by no less than the Creator of the universe, to receive all those that come to Him. Verse 38. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of Him who sent me. One of the defining traits of Jesus Christ was the fact that He repeatedly stated that while He was the Son of God, while He was perfect, while He was all the things we know Him to be, He was subordinate to the Father, and in particular, the will of the Father. You think about it. Jesus Christ could have said, cut me a break. I mean, after all, I'm the Son of God. You know, can't I decide some things on my own? But, I mean, that's an aside. Verse 39, this is the will of the Father who sent me, that all He has given me, I should lose nothing. So when Jesus Christ repeatedly states during His ministry that He's here to do the will of the Father, here we have in definitive terms, straight from Jesus Christ, that the will of the Father was that He would not lose anything. No one. Not one. But should raise it up at the last day. And if there's one thing I'm confident of, is that Jesus Christ will deliver on that promise. I can't stop Him from doing that, and neither can anybody else. The only thing that we need to be concerned about is that we do not get in His way. And this is the will of Him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in Him may have everlasting life, and I will raise Him up at the last day. Jesus Christ is in charge. He is our personal Savior. So, while I'm very saddened by current events, and it has affected people tragically, and I apologize to you as an elder for that being the case, on the one hand. On the other hand, I know with confidence that whatever happens or has happened, it's not going to interfere with Jesus Christ's commitment to make sure that those that are His will be raised up at the last day. Nobody can stop that except the individuals in question. The individuals in the sense that willingly walk away from serving God. Christ is not going to give up on anyone, and that should be very encouraging to us. Principle number four, going back to Daniel chapter 6, Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. Principle number 4 is that we trust God for deliverance. Daniel sets, you know, in this case, a classic example of doing that. I mean, the famous story of Daniel in the lion's den. But notice the backdrop. You know, in so many ways, the more the world changes, the more it stays the same. Verse 1 of chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so the king would suffer no loss. So here you have another king that came forward. And again, Daniel finds himself in the administration, which is remarkable. You have a Jewish captive that has a commitment to God, and yet he serves these powerful Gentile kings. And invariably, because of the knowledge and wisdom and the grace and the excellent spirit that Daniel possessed, invariably he rose to the top. You know, he was either on the top or in the lion's den, either on the top or in some, you know, his life, if you look at it, and he was either on in a powerful place or, in this case, getting ready to get thrown into the lion's den. It's a remarkable example of someone, a man of God, that truly understood, as Paul said, he knew how to be abased and also how to abound. Verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Whoa. Now we got a problem. Now he's become a threat. Because not only is he a governor, one of three, the king noticed that he was so effective that he was considering setting him over his entire realm, much in the same way that the Pharaoh did with Joseph. So now action has to be taken. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Would to God that I would have a record like that. You know, I'm a man of many faults, and it wouldn't take someone like this very long to get John nailed to the wall. They'd find something. But Daniel was so exceptional that they said in verse 5, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said to him, King Darius lives forever. So they concocted a plan. And they said something here that was not true. They said, all the governors of the kingdom, the administrators, the satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. So they played to King Darius' ego, you know, for 30 days, you know, people are going to worship you. And in ancient times, that was not that uncommon. And the Romans did that. The Caesars, they were worshipped. And so they set it up here for 30 days. Now, O king, established the decree and signed the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Now the question is, what to do? And of course, I mean, I'm focusing on one principle here, but of course we could find many others. So what was Daniel to do? You know, he had a custom. A custom, as we will see in a minute, of praying to God three times every day. Now, Daniel had options. Daniel had a lot of options. I mean, he could have said, you know what, the decree is only 30 days. You know, God won't mind if I take a vacation for 30 days. He had another option that's much more practical. He could have said, well, you know what, there's no command that states that I have to pray somewhere where these people have access to it. You know, I'll just do it in my mind or do it in secret. Daniel doesn't seem to be particularly concerned about this royal decree, which shows the degree of confidence that he had in God. Now, when Daniel knew, verse 10, that the writing was signed, that he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. The point here is that Daniel did not change his customary approach in serving God because of a king's decree. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. These folks thought they had him. They thought, he's history. Finally, we'll get to take the positions of power that we so dearly wanted. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times each day. So they had a multiple witnesses, not just one, but three infractions in one day. And the king, when he heard these words, realized he'd been duped, and was greatly displeased with himself. That ever happened to you? You displeased with yourself? Now I always tell my employees, you get upset with me, you're in good company. I get upset with myself, I don't like myself that much most of the time anyways. If you come and tell me in private that you're upset with me, I'll sympathize with you. The king was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then the men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians, that no decree or statute which the king established may be changed. So the king gave command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. It's very interesting. It's interesting, the confidence that the king had in Daniel's example of serving God. Verse 18. Now the king went into his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. And then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, you know, always wondered what he was thinking. And he came to the den of lions and called out. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouth, so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him, and also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken out of the den. And of course, you know the conclusion of the story. Those that conspired against him were thrown into the same den of lions and consumed by them. But notice the principle. Trusting God for deliverance, and Daniel stating that he was, the reason that he was delivered was because he was innocent before God and man. Brethren, what is important for us is to maintain our relationship with God, to be right with God, and allow him to bring us deliverance, because without God, there is no deliverance. We deserve death. We deserve nothing. So, the importance of trusting God as Daniel did for deliverance is very important, because aside from God, there is none. And that should be more clear today than it was even a number of years ago, because when you see what happens in this world, you know, we trust in our modern world in so many different things. Technology, we trust in the financial systems, we trust in insurance, we trust in Social Security, but ultimately all of these things could very quickly collapse, and almost did just over 2 years ago. In fact, the financial markets in September of 2008 were on the brink, literally within hours or days of a complete meltdown, where sophisticated financial instruments known as credit default swaps, had those unraveled in a disorderly manner, the whole global financial system would have collapsed. The problem is, brethren, that problem still exists. We just put a huge multi-trillion-dollar band-aid on it, and ultimately it will collapse, and we know what will emerge, and then we know that the end is very near. But people trust in these things. Daniel was a captive among the Jews. He didn't have financial instruments, constitutional rights, and so forth. He knew where he needed to trust. The fifth principle, and the final one, is that we, like Daniel, maintain an attitude of repentance. Let's go to Daniel chapter 9. It's a remarkable example of Daniel interceding for his people. And I think that is very important for us today. that we look at Daniel's example and emulate it, because an attitude of repentance is really the only way to get reconciliation with God and man. Daniel chapter 9, beginning in verse 2. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by the books the number of years specified by the word of the Lord given through Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. Then I set my face toward the Lord God to make requests by prayer and supplication with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. Here you have a man that served in Gentile regimes, high up in administration. And yet, when he approached God, he did it with a level of humility and a spirit of repentance that is remarkable for a man that by any estimation could be considered righteous, except that Paul said there is no such thing as righteous. Men all fall short. And yet notice in verse 4 how he prayed. And I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession and said, O Lord, great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant and mercy with those who love him and with those who keep his commandments, we have sinned and committed iniquity. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgments. Brethren, we is the operative word here. Daniel could have easily and justifiably have inserted the pronoun here, they have sinned and committed iniquity. They have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgments. And the reason he could have justifiably done that is because he was the recipient. He bore the consequences, along with many others in Judah, for the sins of his fathers, which were primarily Sabbath-breaking and idolatry, and ultimately resulting in a very young man, a very capable young man, being taken into captivity. And yet after 70 years, when Daniel made intercession for his people, all of them, he knew which pronoun to insert. We have sinned. Neither have we heeded your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings and our princes and to our fathers and all the people of the land. O Lord, righteousness belongs to you, but to us, shame of face as it is this day. Brethren, let me speak candidly. The fact that we are here today is a shame. There's no other way to characterize it, to make excuses for it. I will state here what I've said a number of months ago, and this is basically, this is John Miller's interpretation or position. I said, when elders behave, and that's me included, because I'm an elder, when elders behave in a manner that brethren feel compelled to choose between Paul or Apollos, it's a disgrace. The fact that that has occurred is a shame. And I think we all need to pray fervently that God have mercy upon us so that we can move forward. And that includes everybody on every side of every issue. Because at the end of the day, Jesus Christ will prevail, and woe be it to anyone who causes one of those that God has called out and given Christ the responsibility to make sure that they're raised up at the last day. Woe be it to anyone that gets in between Christ and one of those chosen ones, because I'm very confident on who will win. And that's something I take very seriously. Nevertheless, Daniel's example of maintaining an attitude of repentance is a principle that we all need to apply. O Lord, righteousness belongs to you, but to us shame of face as it is this day. This is not a discussion about or division over the righteous or the unrighteous. We want to talk about which category we fit. Read Paul. He gives you the answer. To the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and all Israel, those near and those far off, in all countries to which you have driven them because of the unfaithfulness which they have committed against you. O Lord, to us belongs shame of face, to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, because we have sinned against you. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him. We have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God to walk in his laws, which he set before us by his servants the prophets. Yes, all Israel has transgressed your law, has departed so as not to obey your voice. Therefore the curse of the oath written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, has been poured out against us because we have sinned against him. And he has confirmed his words which he spoke against us and against our judges who judged us by bringing upon us great disaster. For under the whole heaven such never has been done as what has been done to Jerusalem. Verse 18, he concludes by saying, O my God, incline your ear and hear, open your eyes and see our desolations in a city which is called by your name. For we do not present our supplications before you because of our righteous deeds, but because of your great mercies. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and act. Do not delay for your own sake, my God, for your city and your people are called by your name. This was an urgent plea that he addressed to God. And the interesting thing, brethren, is that in this particular case, the biblical record includes a little bit of insight on what was going on behind the scenes that I believe is applicable to our situation today. Behind the scenes, God heard the prayer. If we go over to Daniel chapter, Daniel chapter 10, verse 11, an angel was sent to speak to Daniel to provide assistance, and notice what happens here. O Daniel, greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. You know, here is a great man of God, without blemish, by all accounts. And yet when he was faced with the messenger of God, he trembled. And he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I have been left alone there with the kings of Persia. So here behind the scenes, while Daniel was waiting 21 days, he the messenger was held up by demonic powers, and only after Michael intervened was he able to break through and come to his aid. Brethren, we live in a world that is so sophisticated that people poke fun at the notion of a devil. The devil is hard at work. Not just with us, but everybody. But I would urge you to consider who the accuser of the brethren is. And when accusations are bandied about, then pause and think about who the real enemy is. There's a lot of things right now that are bandied about that are just not true. I mean, you may remember I was here 2 weeks ago to guest speak. I gave a sermon regarding the sanctity of the Sabbath. And, you know, while that needed to be said, one of the reasons I gave it was because the word on the street was that John Miller, United Church of God elder, business owner, was now teaching that it's okay to work on the Sabbath, which I found to be rather interesting because I'd never thought, or thunk anything of the sort. But it occurred to me that if the rumor mill is capable of fabricating something like that, then I needed to be very careful about what I heard, rumor mill or otherwise, and make sure that it was true. And the biblical example is simple, very simple, and that is, go to the source. We've got telephones. Call the person and find out. Because to continue to spread information that is inaccurate is not helpful, no matter what your perspective might be. It will only serve to wreak greater havoc. But to conclude here, brethren, because Daniel humbled himself and used the pronoun we and came before God, and when the messenger got through, one of the longest, actually the longest prophecy in the Bible is a result of that. And we'll conclude here in chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, because it talks to our ultimate destiny, as we read in John chapter 6, that Jesus Christ is committed to ensure that God's chosen ones will achieve. Chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time, and at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. God writes his people in a book. And Jesus Christ's job is to ensure that they stay the course. Let's not get in his way. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. That's the destiny that God has in store for those that follow him. Brethren, Daniel gives us sound, proven principles for the road ahead. Number one, purpose in your heart to follow God, but do so with grace and wisdom. Principle number two, seek the mercies of God, lest we perish. Number three, follow God's command without compromise. Principle number four, trust in God for deliverance. And principle number five, maintain an attitude of repentance. We will take a short break after services, and then I'll be down front and answer questions. And we may have a couple logistical things to work out to ensure continuity for the next several weeks.